freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
All right, here we go. Another podcast, Brock and Salk, from 710sports.com. Hi, everybody. We missed you. A week off. I miss all of you guys, of course.
People were mad out there, too.
I know.
Where is this podcast? You slackers.
I know. You go from every day to once a week to, maybe whenever we feel like it. Whatever, man. I need a little vacation. I watched the game, though. On vacation, I watched the Seahawks just squeak by the old Tampa Bay Buccaneers, thankfully beating Bruce Arians and your boy Jameis Winston choking on his big W.
You have a good time?
I had a great time, yeah. Of course.
10?
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Yeah, Maui does not disappoint.
No, that's place is magical.
Pretty spectacular place. And Kyle gave me a bunch of good recommendations. And yeah, it was pretty awesome. But man, what a crazy, weird trip this is for this Seahawks team. I said a lot. This is the strangest Seahawks team I can remember.
But you love them.
I do. I think I do. I can't figure them out. Nothing has me more at a loss than the Seahawks team. They're 8-2. They look like they should be 7-9. They're bizarre.
Are you serious? The Seahawks just knocked off the undefeated 49ers, and you're going to walk in here with your first take being they look like a 7-9 team?
They're strange and that I love them.
Are we serious?
But they're bizarre. They have two good players, and those two players are so good, they've carried them to 8-2.
My week on Maui was devoid of hand-wringing, so here I am, back for more.
I'm not hand-wringing. I'm not hand-wringing at all. You guys think I'm hand-wringing, but I'm not.
Do you think because the reason you don't know them is because we don't get to talk every day for 3+ hours?
I know them very well.
No, you said earlier.
Look, I haven't talked to Pete Carroll for 5 weeks, and I have no idea what's going on,
I
can't understand what's happening.
You said, I can't figure these guys out. Like, if we had a chance to do what we did for 10 years, and let's talk every day and like work through everything, you think it'd be different?
I have those conversations, just not with you. I have them with other people. No, they're bizarre.
Yes, I'm at the whiskey clubs downtown.
They have Russell Wilson.
I have them at the Ritz on Maui where I watch the Seahawks.
I was sitting with a few business owners of their times, you know, just spending some time together casually over a few drinks.
Where did you watch the Buccaneers game?
This podcast stinks. I hate it. Let's start
after departing Benaroya Hall and taking in a lovely African music display.
What has happened here? My take is that this team is bizarre and different and weird, and I think I like them, even though they only have two good players.
You know what my take is? This is the most resilient. We've watched Pete's crazy teams and this crazy, resilient, tough, neutral quarterback for 10 years, and this is the most resilient Seahawk team we've seen yet. And I don't know if it's because there's no drama. I don't know if this is because it's now Russ and Bobby's team, and those are just two tough-minded guys that have been through every battle and have all the scars to kind of share and show the guys. But, yeah, you're right. Talent-wise, it is at times dumbfounding. The play doesn't always match like what we've seen in the past at the very heights. But, man, are they ever resilient. And that Monday night game was, I know when Russell says it, Russell says that was the craziest game I've ever been in. To me, that resonated. And it resonated like, is that true? I mean, that Green Bay playoff game was
crazy. Much crazier. I mean, Russell's just wrong, by the way, about that. That's why I don't listen to anything Russell says. Because it's not the craziest game he's ever been in. The Green Bay NFC Championship game was crazier. The San Francisco NFC Championship game was crazier. What are you talking about?
I don't know. Not crazier. Yes. Those were horrible.
Dude, stop.
In a
stop.
Pit and had stop. To climb out of it.
What are you talking about?
And had to climb
no,
out of it.
They were both crazier than
this
that.
Was down, and then you're back. And then it's down, and then you're back. And then you're down, and it's your back. And
there's
they're
no hope,
swinging.
And then there's hope. And there's no hope, and then there's hope. And there's no hope. And then just one, and it's lost. It was. I mean, that's crazy. That's truly crazy.
If by crazy you mean poorly played, then I totally agree. It was one of the most poorly played games
poorly
I've seen.
Officiated.
Poorly officiated, poorly played. That looked like a battle of two mediocre teams trying to throw haymakers with their arms tied behind their back.
To me, it looked like an undefeated team and a 7-2
and it ended
team
up as an awesome
game of the year.
As an awesome game and incredibly fun to watch, and I enjoyed every second of it, but I'm kind of dumbfounded by them. Russell Wilson is the MVP. Jadeveon Clowney is a force to be reckoned with. And everyone else on this team looks terrible. That's bizarre.
Tyler Lockett is phenomenal.
If he's alive.
DK Metcalf's the rookie of the year at wide receiver.
Correct.
DK Metcalf had like four balls in that game on Monday night. He should have caught that he didn't catch.
Chris Carson is proving to be one of the three best running backs in the game.
Chris Carson had an awful fumble. Penny had an awful fumble. Ross had a fumble. They did like a million things wrong. You realize the Seahawks are two. Penny had a fumble. And by the way, a false start where he left like 10 seconds before everybody else. What was that?
That's like defiance. No, like, that was
Joey Hunt. Joey Hunt forgot to snap the ball. The whole offense
Got run over on the first passing play of the
bless
game.
His heart.
Unlike anything I've ever seen. And yet, Brock, you're right. He was resilient and he battled the rest of the day. And I think they injured the guy who ran him over.
Seriously, on a positive note, let's start here. Is this the most resilient Seahawk team that we've watched in 10 years? Can you make that statement 10 games in?
I'm not sure. Here's the question. Let me answer your question with a question.
Okay.
Would you be saying that if the two games where teams had missed kicks at the end of the game had gone the other way? Because the Seahawks are 8-2, but to be fair, they are two buzzer beater kicks away from being 6-4. And I'm not trying to play the negative. They won those games. They banked them. They are 8-2. They are right there in the driver's seat for not only being the division winner, but the number one seed in the NFC. I mean, they have as good a shot as anybody does of that.
But if the Rams at home a few weeks ago
hit their kick at the end of the game, they lose. Mm-hmm. And if the Niners, that's a 47-yard field goal. NFL kicker should hit that. I know he's a rookie, and that's part of it, and you get that benefit. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking away from them, but they are legitimately two missed kicks away from 6-4.
Mm-hmm.
If those kicks had gone the other way, what would you say about their resilience?
Yeah, I would still say, to your point earlier, just about the number of known commodities and guys playing to their absolute best level, right? There's not a long list for the Seahawks, right? There's a bunch of still unknown commodities. B, some of your top-notch, top-paid guys are not necessarily, I think, playing at their best all the time. But, man, I think I still would say that because they just have no quit in them. Russell's just got this neutral, right? It's what he loves to live in. It's a lot of the mindfulness that we talk about, that he just loves to stay so flat, and he doesn't even blink through good or bad of those situations. And I think this team has taken on his personality, right? If teams take on the personality of their head coach and their quarterback, I think in the NFL, especially with elite franchise guys, your teams take on the personality of your quarterback.
I think that's a great point. They have taken on quite a bit of Russ's personality and maybe Clowney's personality as well. I think I heard you talking about how he's just very Seattle, kind of chill. He's got his gelato sweatshirt.
He's holding it down for ice cream.
He's holding it. He's got his microphone down by his waist. Yes. Like Steve Young, who's finally looking old and not like was yelling at him. Like Clowney's kind of got some of that same chill vibe off the field, and yet get him on the field. Look, if there's one play that I think maybe encapsulates some of that resilience, it was very late. I think it's in overtime of the game on Monday night. Jimmy Garoppolo goes deep, and this game looked like it was going to be over.
Samuel is wide to the right. Garoppolo takes a shotgun snap. Four-man rush. He's going to throw it up deep for Samuel, who's out there. Ball is tipped away. What a great play by Shaq Griffin, who reaches out and knocks it away. He's slow to get up, but he does get to his feet. And number 26 for the Seahawks may have just saved a huge play, because Samuel, for a moment, was open, and just like that, Griffin closes the gap and tips that ball away.
And maybe it was a little underthrown, I don't know, but that was, that game was over. You see the ball in the air, you're watching on TV, you see how open the guy's like, game over.
Yep.
Nope, he jumps and somehow covered ground like that with a lead. I haven't seen that. Not from this team this year.
No, that was incredible. You're not seeing, people, Quandre Diggs, just knocking people out. Blair hit a little bit, and I think he got his feet wet, and I don't think Pete loved the game tape as much as we love some of the different highlights. So you bring in a veteran guy. I thought he settled some of those things down. I thought their run defense was impeccable. And Jadeveon Clowney was as good a defensive player singularly as we have seen in Seattle.
In that game.
Oh, my gosh. He had 10 QB pressures. He had 10 QB pressures alone in that game. What he did run and pass in that game.
I love when a guy has a game like that, and all of the great football experts, the competitive football watchers in the press box, and the people on the broadcast get to tell you, because you can't possibly tell at home how great a game Jadeveon Clowney's having.
Correct.
They need to, hey, look, He didn't get the sack here, but I want to show you what a – yeah, no kidding.
That was like, tough. That whole operation was a bit – yeah, that was a whole – the whole deal, man.
We'll get to them.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Let's do this. Can we do this? Yeah. Can we – you love to always do this when we had our show every day and you have your kind of timeline and outline and all these things. Let's just go singularly here, one by one for a little bit. Okay, Russell Wilson. Either through 10 games or the Monday night game, or you think he is the unquestioned MVP right now?
I think Lamar Jackson will have something to say about it. He looks fantastic, but I think Russ is right there with him, don't you? I mean, I don't know who else it would be other than those two guys right now.
Aaron Rodgers. Too.
I don't think it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. I don't know. Yeah. I've watched some of Aaron Rodgers this year. He looks good, but Russell... Aaron Rodgers has some level of a team around him.
When Russell threw that pick, were you thinking that? Like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, the MVP. Like, you have a chance.
No.
You weren't thinking that?
No, I still think Russell's – I mean, that was the second pick of the year.
Correct.
I still think Russell is the MVP.
Do you realize that if that ball gets over the linebacker, do you know who's in the one-on-one at, like, the two-yard line?
Sherm?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Sherm had the deeper zone. The linebacker dropped out. If that ball gets over, it's Hollister and Sherm at the goal
50-50
line.
50-50 Hollister fumbles. Every single time Hollister,
out of here.
Every time he looked for contact, I was like, this guy looks like he's going to fumble.
What are you talking about? That guy's made huge plays already this season.
I know.
But, but in that game, the Seahawks had fumbled five times. Every catcher, hold on to the ball! Hold on to the ball! Like, oh my gosh, please!
Right?
If a defender came within 3 feet of them.
Right.
Just hold on the ball.
Didn't it look like Hollister, by the way, at the sideline kept turning it up and like taking contact with the football in his arm. You're like, dude, you're going to fumble.
Did San Fran's defense remind you a little of the Hawks defense of old? Where there would be all of a sudden you're like, oh, you got the, oh, you don't have the edge.
Yeah.
Oh, all of a sudden you're not open. Oh, all of a sudden, gosh, ow.
They're everywhere.
Everywhere.
They're like the LOB. Their secondary is everywhere.
And in every hit. They just have stopping power, every single one of their guys.
And they were getting the benefit of those weird plays that the Seahawks would get when it was Earl and Sherman and the rest of those guys, like the DK Metcalf fumble, where you're just like, how does that even happen? Well, it's like Earl Thomas punching the ball out at the goal line a bunch of times. Just like, I'm surprised that ball didn't go out of the end zone for the touchback fumble.
Yes.
That's what that game needed was the touchback fumble rule. That was the only thing missing.
So you love where Russ is at.
I think Russell has been sublime.
Yes.
Honestly, when you watch him play, almost every single decision he makes is correct. The fact that ball did get picked off on Monday night stands out so much because it was one of,
the second,
quite frankly, only two bad plays he's made all year, and they've both been picked off.
Yes.
What he should try doing is throwing the ball to KJ Wright. Then there's no chance it would be picked off.
So is this just a – you are on fire, by the way. This we should have expected this. Howdy, Kyle. We know what happens when he goes away on vacation.
You know exactly.
He loses his tethers. Where are his tethers that ground him to reality and society? He goes away from us for 2 weeks and comes back completely untethered.
No, you remember Lundberg 2?
Yeah.
After you went on vacation, Lundberg 2 had to call you in like, now listen.
Stop.
These really hot takes are great, but you can't drop like –
these aren't hot takes. What is hot
the
about
the Seahawks are 7-9 team, and they don't deserve to be at the top of the NFC.
Extremely snarky.
The Seahawks are two kicks away from 6-4.
They have two good players.
Let me throw that ball to KJ Wright.
As long as we're here, let me just read Brock's texts to me in the middle of that game about KJ Wright.
No, you will not do that. Those are personal.
Are they?
Stay right there. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I waited till he dropped that, like in the late fourth quarter. Dude, how could he drop that? Seriously, how could you drop that? That is the point that broke me Monday night.
See, like, that doesn't break me at all. There's so many other things that drive me crazy before
Game's
I even
over.
Get to
Game's
that.
Over.
All right, we'll come back to some of the things driving
me
crazy.
Okay, so that was Russell.
That was Russell. How about Clowney?
Incredible. Absolutely breathtaking, incredible. And while we have seen...
What is it he does that makes... Like, why is he able to generate
even the scoop
pressure?
And score. We men's group was over watching this game, which also made it a blast. I mean, we had so much fun watching it from all different perspectives. And Steve Kern's like, look at him when he scoops and scores that. That guy's 6'6", 270. And he looks as agile as Tyler Lockett at, 5'10", 190 scooping that thing. Like, literally, to do that in the effortlessness and the ease
so
with
it's
which
the athleticism
that guy,
more than the size,
it is the
right?
flashes of dynamic athleticism that just blow your mind. It is what Pete, like when Pete drew up the Leo or the pass rusher, like, this is what I want. I want 6'6". I want long arms. I want unbelievable bend. I want agility. I want speed. I want all of it. And usually he gets like half of them or maybe two-thirds
is
of them.
Is he the best edge player that the Seahawks have had with Pete?
He's, yes. Because he plays run and pass equally dynamic. Like what he does to destroy the edge. So he's doing what Bennett could do with like elite athleticism. He's wrecking the game like Michael Bennett would do, but Michael Bennett did with the Rasheed Wallace, I'm going to look as ugly as possible way of doing it. The shoulder pads, running a 5 flat 40, you know, just
But I'm talking about results and sort of what, I mean, you know, Bennett and Averill and Clemens and those guys sort of had the advantage of having each other.
Yes.
Poor Jadeveon Clowney has Ziggy Ansah on the other side. Or whatever that is, the ghost of Ziggy Ansah, or whatever is playing
Shaquem
out there.
Griffin on Monday night. What's up?
That was after Ziggy got benched for a guy who weighs 140 pounds. I mean, like that is. I think that honestly, Jadeveon Clowney, Clowney's doing more impressive.
Jadeveon Clowney is a mixture of Clemens and Averill and Bennett, and you put them all together, and you look at the strength of Michael Bennett, just the physical strength of what he could do, right, and blowing both the run and the pass. And then you look at the speed of Averill when he could come off of an edge, and the anger at times of Clemens. Like, you just throw it all together.
He's like the Arnold Schwarzenegger version of when you take all those guys together and you get like one version that's like him and Twins, and then Ziggy Ansah's the Danny DeVito on the other side. Like, you take all the good that you get from Bennett and Averill and Clemens, and you get the incredible Jadeveon Clowney. And then all the other leftover stuff, jumping off sides, complain, like all of that, that is where you get Ziggy Ansah.
Are you done, Brock?
What?
I'm trying.
You can't.
In the fight,
tell me I'm wrong.
At one time, Clowney was talking to Ansah on the field. They must have been talking about a stunt or something, but I want to imagine that Clowney's like, dude, I am exhausted here. Can you just do one thing for us?
One play.
Just make one bro.
Play,
how about when all five guys in the offensive line go to me and I still take Joe Staley and just make him like embarrass him with a swim move? How about doing something to clean
I'll
it
let
up?
Let you wear my gelato sweatshirt if you make one play, bro. Just one for me. But he has been a revelation.
All right, where are you at with Chris Carson? It's been a strange couple of weeks for Carson. There are moments of brilliance.
Chris Carson is a grown man.
I know. What is with the
one of the five just most powerful, dynamic, grown men playing running back?
He fumbled again on Monday night. They got it back.
What?
Joey Hunt was Johnny on the spot. But where are you with Carson right now?
He is loose when the ball. Right, he's just loose. And when we talked about this early in the year. And once you have that target, everybody knows it. Mm. So that is like one of the top things on the game plan sheet. Like, yep, this guy's loose with the ball. We have a chance. We have a chance to get yet another one. Right? Didn't he fumble against the Buccaneers too?
Yeah.
I mean, he has been kind of back on this deal, and it's just you thought you buried it. Pete loved on you after 3 weeks of fumbling every game and critical fumbles. Coach supported you, had your back. So I guess it's just more than anything an attention to detail that he can't relax. He can't rest on that for a second. But man, is he different when he carries the ball. Like the touchdown run he had on Monday night, yes, he was leaning, and it should have been a false start. And yes, Upati got a full-step advantage on everybody else on the line, and they didn't call that. But the force with which he ran that touchdown and in some of those short yardage situations, I mean, it was Marshawn-esque. I mean, he just is a grown man, and they're lucky to have him.
He's got 6 fumbles on the year.
6 that he's given away? Or
6. He's lost 4 of them.
Yeah, that's...
He's got 6 fumbles.
In 10 games.
I mean, that's a remarkable number for a guy at his level, and it does concern me. I love Carson, man. As you know, I think he is a blast to watch. That big 32 looking so good.
So good.
I love the way he takes on physical contact. I love when he bails people out, and he does all that. He catches the ball well, pretty well out of the backfield. Like I really love the guy. The fumbles are not okay.
You ready for another guy?
You just have no option after that anyways. That's the tough part. Like it's him or nobody. That's it. So
well, that Procise, he's just a healthy scratch.
Yeah, healthy scratch.
But they do have him for next week. It'll be nice to see if Procise can step in.
I am not going to take your bait and start arguing for Penny. But because
nobody.
All right. Let's have this
even
conversation.
Even this week, Mike, nobody. As punchy as he is, he's not going there.
Let me have this conversation quickly. What is the deal with the shotgun running game? I don't get it. What is the deal with the shotgun running game? Now, Kyle... The Penny thing is sort of a separate conversation.
Okay, all right, let's separate that.
But
formationally, not personnel.
But when you give Penny the ball, when you hand it off to him running downhill from under center, he's pretty darn good. He's continued to make positive gains and had big runs when you hand him the ball like a regular running back. I don't understand what the deal is with the shotgun game. And Brock, they should have lost the game on Monday night because of it. You have that great first down run, second down run, you get to third and short, and you're running out of shotgun. If you're going to run the ball on third and one, third and two, mm-hmm. run the ball. Get under center, get a fullback or whatever, hand the ball to a running back running downhill, and let him accelerate instead of having to wait and pause and dink around while you wait to hand him the ball out of the shotgun. You're bigger, you're nastier, you're more physical. Chris Carson and Rashad Penny are both good and maybe better in that situation. Unless you want Russell Wilson to start carrying the ball more in read option, mm-hmm. stop. It's awful.
They're going to say to you, Michael, this is the best way we generate movement. That when we get in the gun and we run the zone scheme, this is the best way that we think against, especially against that
They're
front,
wrong.
That we can
but
generate
all of
movement.
The evidence in watching the games is the opposite of that.
Well, that is their judgment. Those are their numbers.
Their
That's
judgment
their
is
analysis
wrong. Their
and their personnel.
Okay. And their judgment is wrong. All you have to do is watch. Forget analysis and what is your word that you like?
Which
analytics.
One? Yes.
You don't need analytics for this.
Do some analytics on this.
You
run
just
an analytics.
You just need
how about,
eyes.
How about when was a test that said third and six, and this is the longest third down for yeah. the Seahawks in the game? They lived in short yardage, right? They stayed on schedule. They lived right where they wanted to be and wanted to get in those third and ones and third and twos and third and threes.
They do a million things right, but then when yeah. they get to third and one, can you explain?
I can. Well, yes, I can. I think that's number one. They don't feel great about some of their edges. And Luke Wilson is out, and obviously Disley is out. And they don't feel good that if they get under center, that edge or what have you is going to collapse.
But
so they
when,
get in gun.
On, but hold on.
They
but
get
when
in
they
gun,
do get under center, that doesn't happen.
Well, they do.
Like, I get that they don't feel good about
they
it.
They did get
but
in.
When they run the ball that way, it works.
They don't have a fullback that they trust and believe in. So obviously, in this matchup, that was their plan.
Yes, except when they do it, it works.
Well, you remember the ones that work, right? We seem to remember the ones that work. I don't know what the analytics say on that, but that's going to be their judgment. And their judgment is,
I have eyes.
We will be better if Russell at least makes them think about the edge rather than getting under center where they can totally tee off and wail on us. Now, let's get to Rashad Penny. What's going on?
What do you mean? When you give him the ball in a position that he's good at, he looks great. I don't understand what the problem is.
He looks great.
They did not.
That's a little far.
They didn't even give him a second chance. Two carries.
Because Pete probably didn't even want to give him a first chance.
Yeah. Well, they did because they had ProSize inactive, so he knew it was his chance and his opportunity, and that guy is just not running with it.
And then
just,
even when they lost their kick returner, Rashad Penny was an all-American kick returner in college. He still wasn't even getting that chance.
No. Oh, tough.
Crazy.
Okay. Right, it was two games ago that Rashad Penny ran for 7 yards a carry. Mm-hmm. Had
How
eight
many
carries
yards did he run for?
Had 8 carries for 55 yards.
Are you dying on the Rashad Penny hill?
I'm not dying.
No, are you going to die on
it?
In 8 carries? I'm sorry. That's
man,
not good.
What a talent. 55 yards in one NFL
big
game?
Touchdown.
Or was that in one half? Was that in the whole game?
Well, it's not his fault. They only gave him the ball 8 times.
55 yards out of this guy. They got to feed him the rock. I mean, what is Shoddy looking at? This guy ran
cherry,
for 55
What about
yards?
Cherry picking stats? It was 6.9 yards per carry. You don't want that? You don't want to gain 7 yards every time you touch the ball? That's not good for you.
Man,
Kyle says no.
If he carried the ball 20 times, he would have definitely
tell you what,
run for 7 yards
He was so good in that
carry.
Game at 7
oh
yards per
God.
Carry, that was about what the Seahawks defense
hey, small
gives up every
size,
time that they go to
that.
Play on the
hey,
field.
Just ignore the sample size.
All right,
size.
Be quiet. We're going to be right back. Take a quick break. All right, we will play Which is Better, Brock, here at the end of the podcast, which I'm excited about. I've missed Which is Better over the last couple of weeks. So that will be back here at the end of the podcast. I feel like I kind of got us off track at the very beginning by trying to speak with some realism about the Seahawks. And then Howdy, of course, lost his mind
right.
and started accusing me of being negative, which I really wasn't trying to be. But I do have some questions.
Okay.
And we tried this, I think it was the last podcast a couple of weeks ago, where I was saying you kind of have to start asking some different questions about these Seahawks because they just look so different. Why don't – look, I get they're 8-2, and you're right, the resilience is important. Why don't they look like we're accustomed to, though? I mean, these are not the this is not the Seahawks team that we've gotten used to. In some ways, it's better. Obviously, they're mm-hmm. winning more games than they have the last few years. But why do they look different?
Well, I think the two areas that jump out the most, and I'll start on the positive, is Russell. Russell looks different. Russell has taken yet another step this season. Russell looks like every elite the Tom Brady's, Aaron Rodgers, those guys at the very top, Drew Brees, like in the top tier guys that, okay, the game is just different when this dude's out there. He just makes it look easy. Even against a 49er crew that was awesome and was, you know, wrecking things at the line of scrimmage early, Russell still went up and down the field, right? Up and down the field, the turnover, DK unfortunate, the turnover obviously in overtime disappointing. But I think they look different, and from a positive standpoint, because Russell is playing this game with such ease. The game has even slowed down further for him that when he misses any throw, you're like, whoa, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Like, is that abnormal?
I mean, a great example is the 3rd and 16 that he threw to Malik Turner. I mean,
bro,
after just a garbage call, it should be 3rd and 6 or whatever it is. They make just another bad
in the grass.
Call in the game.
Yep.
And then Russ just, no problem. The 3rd and 16, no biggie. I'll just escape, move around, and just throw a dart to Malik Turner and put it right in his chest. That was another example. That's one of about 100.
So Jimmy Garoppolo, in that game on Monday night, loses his top two weapons. He doesn't have Kittle going in, and then he loses Emmanuel Sanders, and you saw him. From that point on, he was a different guy. Right, he was a bit hesitant. He had dudes drop the ball. His body language stunk when they did. He should have had 3 or 4 more interceptions, thrown into some spots, thrown right at some Seahawk defenders.
He did look pretty good, though.
He's a handsome guy.
I know.
Oh,
I found out, by the way, I asked Heather which game she wanted to go to this year, and she was like, kind of scanned through. It's like she wanted to go to the last game of the year, which I thought was because it was going to be the last game of the year and the drama and the Seahawks and the Niners and this and that. And she did during the game, she admitted it was just because Jimmy Garoppolo was going to be there. I was like, you think he's going to walk up to the suite or something?
Well, don't you get access? Can we go down?
What do you think is going
to
happen?
What am I supposed to do with that?
Right. So that's the game Heather's going to go to with me.
So, but even look at Garoppolo last night. He doesn't, or Monday night, he didn't create. Right when the play breaks down, it's okay. He's kind of dead. No, he's going to get sacked or throw it away. Russell, it just doesn't matter. Like, if the initial play is not there, great. He's still capable of doing what he used to do.
Yeah.
And that play to Turner was representative of that. Or he can play on schedule. Or you can move the pocket. Or he can change protections. Or he can hit people in the – I mean, he just is – he's playing at such an elite, elite level.
I think
right
his
now.
Offensive line's been better, too.
No question.
I think you have to give them some credit. I was being maybe a little negative earlier at saying that he and Clowney are the only guys doing anything. I think you can probably point to a few others. Their offensive line has been good.
Totally competent.
They've not been elite. It has not been, you know, the Cowboys of the 90s or anything like that. But you're right. They've been very competent. There aren't generally, they're going to give up a sack or two a game.
Sure.
Joey Hunt occasionally is going to get run over because he's 5'3". But overall, he battles back from it. Joey Hunt is resilient, and they make the right calls, and they generally have Brock been able to pick up those stunts that they weren't the last couple of years. I mean, I think having, you know, say what you want about Fluker, and he's not the best pass defender or pass blocker and all that, but he's kind of calmed Ifedi down, and those guys on their side haven't been giving up pressure every time.
Yep.
Upati has been healthy for the most part and pretty darn good. And it looks as if even some of the times when there are free runners, that it's being done almost on purpose, and they're pushing those guys by and using some of their momentum against them and allowing Russell to step up and kind of be a regular quarterback. There are times where the Seahawks offense looks like a normal NFL offense.
That's right.
Which we have not seen forever.
Correct. And their competency up front. So I would say, to answer your question, you know, why does this look so different? It's number one, Russ, and then it's number two, the line of scrimmage. It is that you offensively actually look like these other NFL offensive lines. You actually give Russell a pocket. You actually create some running lanes. You actually are totally competent and do pickup stunts. And on the flip side, you are used to years and years and years and years, your D-line looking like that 49er D-line, where you just rush four and you just destroyed things. And you created havoc. And Michael Bennett wrecked edges. And, you know, you had your big dudes in the middle. Like, you weren't going to... Like, you look like the 49ers defense up front, and save for Jadeveon Clowney, you're just not that anymore. And Clowney compensated in the most mighty of ways on Monday night, was as good singular defensive player on a front the Seahawks have had
in
10 years.
That was as dominant a game as I've seen from one NFL player in years, from a defensive player.
I feel like we've said that about Bobby at times when he's had some of those, like, 15 tackle games.
Some Khalil Mack. Games
I guess that's probably
just taken
true.
Over,
like, but he was right there. I mean, I guess maybe I should say doing all that without the numbers necessarily to back it up. But I mean, Clowney was everywhere.
10 QB pressures.
Yes.
Jimmy Garoppolo never got comfortable. Right. And he, like Joe Staley, go back into the injured list. Like, he embarrassed him, embarrassed McGlinchey on the other side. Played both sides, played the run, played the pass. I mean, we have said this a bunch on these podcasts. I think we even said it when we were doing the show in September. Can you imagine where that group would be without Jadeveon Clowney?
No.
Like, had they not made that move? And I saw folks in the social media.
And Jaron Reed has looked good. I mean, he's looked like Jaron Reed.
He's coming
back. Yeah, he's started to be the guy that we saw last year. And Puna's finally, like, looking at least, like, alive and out there. And Al Woods will make one good play a game, which is great. He's good for one play. I don't know where he goes the rest of the game, but one play a game.
Jefferson is competent when Clowney is out there.
But it's amazing how little the rest of those guys, I mean, Ziggy, forget about, but the rest of those guys, they don't generate anything. And Clowney is like, it's almost like an experiment. What happens if we have one guy? Like, what if there's only one? And everyone else is just barely there. They're just taking up space. Can one freak show just dominate a game and be good enough to get your team
and
to where it needs to be?
Speaking of hand-wringing, oh, Frank Clark. Oh, you got to pay Frank Clark. Oh, you got to take care of Frank.
Do you have to pay Clowney?
You do have to pay Clowney. Yes. And this organization has shown, right, in guys that they trust and believe in, they are willing.
They can't until after the year, right?
Correct.
They cannot offer
them
a contract.
But they will have
now.
An exclusive window until March. Okay. So they will have that window whenever the season ends, and let's hope it's February in the Super Bowl. They'll have a month there where they can have those, and I'm sure have them even a little ahead of time. But whenever the season ends, until free agency, you've got that exclusive window. And my hunch and belief is if they pay Bobby and they pay Richard and they pay Earl and they pay Cam and they pay Russell and they pay these guys top of market, they're going to pay top of market for a guy that I think loves it here and has played his tail off.
How much do you think they're going to negotiate with Ziggy after the year? Do you think that will be also like they're going to try to reach out early and see what they can get?
I mean, like negotiate for him to leave the VMAC if he's squatting?
I'm in. Okay. Like, where do I sign up?
We'll pay you to leave.
Did we scrape that video of me and Heaps chest bumping?
Not yet.
Did we scrape that?
Well, yeah, Kyle, I'm surprised you haven't jumped in because another one of your whipping boys kind of has to pop into that conversation. How is LJ Collier inactive again on Monday night? And I know Pete said while I was gone that he was gonna come up big for them.
He's gonna make
the
a difference by the end of the year.
Well,
first round pick in week 15 is when we're banking on.
I really hope that happens soon. Now I know he's not an early first round pick, so to compare him to what's the kid in Pittsburgh, Bush, is maybe not fair. But when that guy's running around making every single play. And Clelin Farrell, some of these, like, those
I had
guys
TCU,
good.
By the way, a couple weeks ago, and I was kind of asking the folks around TCU. They were kind of surprised that he was a late first round pick. Yeah, that right now, that's feeling like Lawrence Jackson. That just kind of body type just feels like a tweener. That's just, right now, and that story can change, but if I have to give an opinion right now, he's not big enough to play inside, and he's not twitchy enough to play outside. And Lojack was the exact same thing, just kind of an in-between guy. And that right now, I think, is where, especially without training camp, LJ finds himself.
But Lawrence Jackson also didn't have – there's like nothing about him, right?
Oh, he's 6'4", 280, and
no, but I mean, like, his personality, like, he wasn't dedicated, he wasn't obsessed with football, he wasn't mean or nasty, he was just kind of like, he was like a poet.
Yep.
I mean, like,
and he didn't know it.
That's, yeah, exactly.
Ooh.
The thing that I thought was going to be good about Collier is that he would make up for some of that in a Michael Bennett sense by just being mean and nasty and physical and the want to. And I don't know whether we've seen it or not. I mean, he hasn't really played much for us to be able to tell. I really hope that at some point he takes over for Ziggy on the other side and we get to see some of what they saw in a first round.
How not just Ziggy, he's got to overtake, though. He's behind Rasheem Green and
Brandon
Jackson.
I know.
That dude is way
he's
down
buried.
On the deck.
I know. I completely agree. That's not a good sign.
Did that defense on Monday night take a step to where you look at it now? This team is 8-2. The Seattle Seahawks are 8-2. They have as many wins as anybody else in the NFL right now. You're sitting there at 8-2. They've got to buy this upcoming week. Did their defense show you enough that, man, in the final stretch here, and there's tough games, right? There's not really many gimmies as you look at it. Maybe Arizona, but Kyler Murray's always dangerous.
What you're asking me is, does one good defensive performance make up for the previous 9? Like, did they turn a corner?
Did their pass rush all of a sudden with you know, Clowney and with Jaron and Puna and you know some
you
of those
can't
pieces.
Watch that one game and say they turned a corner
when
because
playing,
they never showed a single sign
when
of
you're
life
playing
for
the
9
best
weeks.
Team in the league, an 8-0 team.
It's hard
in
for me to
their
say that.
Building.
It's hard for me to say that because of the week before against a lousy Tampa Bay team that I know found a way to beat Arizona. Like, Tampa's not good, and they were horrendous. That defense was embarrassing against Tampa Bay. That was hard to watch. I'm on vacation watching that game and like ashamed that that's what the defense of my team looks like. right? Like, that's not, nobody wants that. So let's assume the truth is in the middle.
Well,
that,
but
that
hold
are,
on one
that
second.
They are not as good as we saw against San Francisco, and they are not nearly as bad as we saw against Tampa, and that they're hopefully competent and allow Russell Wilson to do his thing.
Okay, let me stop both of you right there. Because Pete reacted, by the way, after that Tampa Bay game in the most un-Pete Carroll-like way that he ever has. Didn't want to talk about the defense. I said, nope, not going to do it. After the post game, after
what
that win,
what is there to say?
Well, but like he said, we're going to kind of remedy this. We're going to fix it. I don't want to talk about it. We're not going to go there. And that's like Pete's usually very, very transparent.
He's willing to give a lot of excuses and explanations for all kinds of things.
Yes, he has been. And he wasn't after that performance. I think there was a level of embarrassment. And they did come back against San Francisco and do a few different things. They did rush Shaquem Griffin even before they benched Ziggy.
Yeah.
You know, they did try that. They did move Marquise Blair out and bring in a Quandre Diggs, who they had traded for.
They brought in a corner blitz once.
They brought a multiple corner blitzes.
You know what's weird? Honestly, driving home, getting ready for that game, I was thinking to myself, I wonder if the Seahawks will ever blitz anybody from their secondary.
Yes.
And then they did.
Yes.
Yeah, I was excited about that. And they got a sack out of it.
And
Trey
they played
Flowers.
A lot more nickel, right? You saw Jamar Taylor, who made you know, some
a
good
lot
play.
Of bad
we
plays and cost him 14
Taylor.
Points.
Yeah, let's see a lot more of that nickel.
Specifically cost you 14
points. See some Ugo Amadi in the final six
can
weeks
we see,
of the year.
I thought that Diggs could play some nickel corner.
He can't. Pete said he's not that old. Yeah, of course he can play.
Because I'd kind of like to see – I thought Blair played pretty well in his two games. I'd rather see I'd rather make an effort to see Blair in the game a little bit more often than some
but
of the other guys.
But there wasn't at least a stubbornness and a hard-headedness to say, no, we're fine. This base defense is fine. Everything we're doing is fine. We don't care. We got our own analytics we're looking at. We're not looking at these other numbers.
That meme with the dog and a coffee cup and the whole house is on fire around.
That's right.
This is fine.
But
everything
is
fine.
It wasn't fine. And they did make some adjustments. And they did turn up the heat. And they did bring a few more exotic blitzes. And they did bring some different personnel. And to me, that's very encouraging for an 8-2 most resilient Seahawks team we've seen yet. Pretty cool.
All right, couple quick things here on the Hawks, and then I'll ask you for a few minutes of Husky conversation because I got to find out what happened, Brock.
And Cougs conversation? We're going to go Husky and Cougs.
No.
Big Apple Cup coming up.
I don't think there's any need for that. But a couple things. What did you make of Russell and Sherm exchanging jerseys? I don't like that. I don't need that. I get what Russ is doing.
What did I make of it? All I thought of was you. That is the beauty of working with you for 10 years. Like, in that moment, I was like, what is Salk possibly thinking right now watching this? Because I got kind of my opinion, and this feels...
I just roll in my eyes. Like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Like, you obviously don't like each other. It kind of brings out the worst of both of their phoniness. Like, we haven't seen much of Russell's phoniness this year, honestly. We've seen, like, normal Russ, and, like, it's like he gets around the people from his old school, and now he tries to show that he's fine and he's cool. It's like, Russ, stop faking the funk, man. You don't need to do that. You don't need to exchange jerseys with this guy who's bad-mouthed you and been nothing but rude and tried to sabotage you at every turn. You don't owe him anything, and you don't look like the bigger man by doing it. You're stooping down to his obnoxious level. Don't just let Richard Sherman go. And as for Sherm, like, first of all, has he beaten the Seahawks yet?
One time.
Did he?
Last year. Nick Mullins threw for like 4-5.
Oh, you're right. I thought they won both those.
No,
I guess they lost
one.
All right, so he's 1-2 against the Seahawks. He's been largely invisible. Thankfully, we didn't see any funny plays like last year when Doug left him in the dust.
It's really funny.
That was just such a funny play. But like,
usually goes left.
You're not fooling anybody. Did you see any of him after the game on ESPN?
Yes.
Just going on and on about how great everybody on his team was. Like, God.
Great learning
lesson.
It's
nauseating.
Yeah, it's...
There's no need for that, Russ. You don't need to prove anything
to
Richard
not give him
or
his jersey?
Earl or Doug or any of... You don't need to prove anything to those guys.
Yep.
You've got your own family now. You don't need your old obnoxious family. Let them go.
And your 8-2 is proving it. And your MVP status is proving it. But in that moment, he's going to do that. In that moment, he's going to just do the politically right thing. And if Sherm
There's
wants
no
to do
need.
It.
Do you think Richard Sherman truly does believe that Russell Wilson is an MVP caliber quarterback and one of the best quarterbacks in the game now?
Can we get Doug on our podcast next week? I'm going to reach out to Doug. We're going to ask Doug if he thinks.
Will he go back on his word and say that Russell Wilson truly is one of the two best quarterbacks in the game?
Well, it depends
MVP
how you're defining best.
Exactly.
I mean, like,
now,
what
you
do you mean by
about,
best?
If you want to define the authenticity of that moment last night when they exchanged jerseys,
it was the
you
authenticity
ask him whether
zero.
Or not he's the MVP of the league this year.
Right.
If his answer is
no,
anything other than
he,
yes.
I heard him. He said somebody on his own team was an MVP guy last night.
Joey
I don't know
Bosa.
Who, then it's is that who he was talking about?
Yeah.
It's what all a fake.
That dude was awful. It was Nick Bosa, right? Not Joey.
Nick Bosa.
Yeah. Regardless, like, he was getting torched. Stop.
Yeah.
Come on. He doesn't think that.
He doesn't. It was a fraud.
He thinks Nick Bosa is the MVP.
That jersey exchange was fraudulent.
Of course.
In every way. It's not real. Richard Sherman has no better feelings about Russell Wilson than he ever has.
I want that 10 years from now. Right, that's going to happen 10 years
right,
from now.
But
and they have
now.
Their reunion. Let I don't. I didn't need it now.
You don't. You are on to your new life and your
Correct.
New friends and your new school. And just because the old school made you feel uncomfortable, you don't need to show them.
How
that
cool
would
have been if like Russ went up to and Sherman's like taking off. He's like, "No, we're good.
Peace, dude.
Yep.
Enjoy that."
What is this?
Why are you taking off your jersey?
What was Russ's peace thing? He used to say a peace.
Pass
thing,
the
right?
peace. Pass the peace.
What if he just passed the peace to Sherman right there?
Peace, man. Eat the ball and eat your jersey because I'm done.
Go Hawks.
All right. One other quick thing. What's going on with the NFL officials this year? I know there are a lot of plays in the game that people were upset about. I know, Braga, you mentioned a few. You've got the, you know, one time Russell's in the grasp, one time he's not in the grasp. You've got the hit with Quentin Jefferson versus the one where Russell, like, you've got them missing the false start on Kirk Carson and on Upati.
You got the flag on the non-fair catch punt.
That's
that was
ridiculous.
You've
that
got the
call.
Missed face mask on Russell's fumble.
But of all of those, honestly, they're the only one that actually made me get out of my seat with any irritation, because all of those are judgment calls and they all are like, okay, I mean, fine. On the 2-point conversion, the play clock
yes.
had gone to zero yes. by almost 2 full seconds.
Correct.
That's not a judgment call. That's literally just like eyesight.
Yes.
How do they miss that?
Yeah, the game has sped up on those guys.
I don't think they're biased. I didn't think that they were against the Seahawks. I didn't have any of those problems, but what in the world are they watching?
The game is too fast. I think the game is too fast
but
for
the
them.
The clock with, isn't too fast. What, it still moves 1 second at a time.
With what they are tasked to do, it's just too much.
I don't believe that.
I feel like it's just too much. They've got too much safety on their mind and protecting these guys. Now I've got to make this judgment and that intent with that.
Why?
Get back to just the mechanics and the basics. What you're asking for there is a very simple 101. Those officials are watching the play. Okay, they look up to the play clock, and when that hits zero, the play goes out.
And I get that there's like this split second.
There's a split second.
I am okay with that. I don't complain. This was almost 2 full seconds.
Correct.
I think Trey Flowers got burned on the play because he stopped playing because the play clock was at -1 or -2. And he's like, all right, well, clearly there's not a play here.
Just the most basic, when the most basic mechanics get screwed
bizarre.
Up, it really brings into question that these guys have too much.
Yes.
Right? When any team and any coach worth their salt, when their team is screwing up the basics, what do they always say?
Well,
we got too much in the game
plan.
Why got too much
there...
in the game plan.
Okay.
Way too much in the game plan. We got to streamline. We got to get back to basics. When our show was bad, hey, we got to get back to basics, man. Put out the show outline. Let's put this thing together.
Right,
let's get back to the
two
basics.
Two things then. One, add an official. Just add one.
The sky official.
Put him in the booth.
Who is up
or
there.
Or another one
on
the field
on the
or whatever.
Time.
If it's too much for everybody and they're working on too many things,
yes.
the NFL's not strapped for cash.
Nope.
Add another official. Like, that doesn't seem like brain surgery. Two, and if you said you'd want to get Doug on the podcast, that's an impossibility. But maybe there's somebody. I think this is going to be an impossibility, too. Why is there no ex-official that we could actually talk to who's not biased?
Mm-hmm.
Because unfortunately, John Perry, who's in the booth on Monday night,
correct.
who's atrocious, and Dean Blandino and Mike Pereira and all the rest of them are just, they are there to cover up for the refs.
Yes.
And I'm not angry at the refs. You know me, I'm not a ref hater. I don't get super mad about officiating. I don't make excuses. The Seahawks weren't even close in that game because of the officiating.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't complain about those things. Mm-hmm. But the officiating across the NFL has just been generally head-scratching. And I don't just mean like PI or not PI. Those are judgment calls. They're going to get them wrong all the time. You live with it, right? Even the hits to the head or some of the defenseless receivers. And the okay, look, the game has changed. You get mad about them, but the game has changed. Okay, mm-hmm. fine. The rule seems dumb on the Nico Thorpe play on the punt mm-hmm. return. I don't think they called it wrong, but the rule is dumb. That guy can give himself up. He's not defenseless. If he is, he's chosen to be. Otherwise, just wave your hand. You have a fair
catch. You have a third-party, independent party that's
who,
just
who else
there?
Can we talk to who can legitimately yep. describe what's going on without just covering for the refs?
Yep.
Who's out there?
Nobody.
Gene Steratore?
Gene Steratore.
Is he working for anybody?
Yeah, he does.
CBS, right?
So then I don't trust him either.
Yeah, he does the CBS, the big game.
Well, he's out.
It's bizarre. Yeah. Like, it's become really frustrating.
And I think those guys would even say, hey, I don't have a bias. Well, you're a former official, and you know how hard that job is.
What
and
team
you're
were you on?
Protect those guys, yes.
You were on the official's team, so that's who you're going to be on the team of.
All right. Well, whatever. We're not going to solve that. Maybe Gene Steratore will come on with us and we can have that conversation. Who do you deal
don't
with
you
at
know
Fox?
Ed
you deal
Hockley with or Sean Hockley?
I know Sean, but not well. Yeah. I mean, I went to college with Sean.
Oh, Mike Pereira will have an opinion, and he's a pretty good talker. And he's actually one that's ruffled a bunch of feathers with former officials. So if you want to chat with him next Tuesday or Wednesday, we'll get that done.
We might need to do that. That might have to be the best we can do because I just...
Rock's a Fox guy. Have Pereira in.
Yeah, we'll get
I wore the gift you gave me, by the way, in Hawaii. I wore that Fox College football hat that you gave me. Oh, a lot of comments.
Compliments
a lot
galore.
Of people wondering whether or not I worked at Fox.
Is that Joe Davis?
No, Fox News, yes. of course. I was just very proud of
Before
that.
We do the Witch's Bear, can we do two things?
The woman I saw in Maui with the QAnon t-shirt actually came up to ask me if I worked at Fox.
Oh, nice.
Go figure. Yeah,
we need to talk a little Huskies. Okay. And then I need to hear the scoop on that guy you golfed with.
Okay, I got to tell you about him. And then also the couple I saw in a restaurant in Maui doing something, A, I've never seen, and B, certainly not on vacation. Oh. So all of that still to come here in the Brock and Salk podcast. Well, the Seahawks keep finding ways to win. I guess the Huskies did win, but it just doesn't look right. This team looks, what is it, Brock? Are they broken? Are they off kilter? Their defense finally played a really good game, took Oregon State and brought them back down to earth after that offense had been really effective. But this was supposed to be the Jacob Eason season.
Yes.
And it's not. Or if it is, it's not good.
Jacob Eason against Oregon was phenomenal. Jacob Eason against Oregon was as good as you could play. That was the Eason that we all anticipated.
Until the fourth quarter when they didn't score a point.
Until
the fourth quarter when they didn't score a point.
Understand, but if you watch the tape, that wasn't all on him.
He was really good until the fourth quarter when they didn't score a point.
They did not score a point. They had 2 3 and outs. They had a penalty, something that killed one of the drives, and he put a ball on Puka Nacua on the fourth down that unfortunately, was probably pass interference, didn't get that call. But Jacob Eason was phenomenal in that game, and that is the game that everybody anticipated this season that you were going to get. And you know what? If the Husky defense that showed up in Corvallis that has grown and developed and is playing younger players had shown up a little bit earlier, you probably beat Oregon. And then you know what? Against Utah, you were right there again. So Oregon and Utah, to me, you showed what you're capable of, and this team should be 8-2. Back to the first conversation about the Seahawks and where they could be. They're 8-2. And they could easily be 6-4. Well, the Huskies are 6-4 and should be 8-2. And losing to Cal and Stanford this season is a severe disappointment, as is the trajectory of their offense. What their offense is doing really since that fourth quarter of the Oregon game and where this thing has gone and the up and down nature of it and the inconsistency of it
is maddening. Why? I mean, when you look across college football, it's not like teams are having trouble scoring points. I mean, the name of the game in college football is points.
And their offensive line has given them a shot to win every single game, as Chris Peterson and Bush Hamden had said to me and even down in Corvallis. Offensive line doesn't have that. Offensive line has done enough to absolutely have you 10-0. If not 8-2, but the rest of the pieces, be it receiver, be it confidence between quarterback and play caller, be it a little bit of the running backs at times, has just been a mess and a real disappointment.
This year is somewhat of a lost cause at this point. I mean, they'll go to probably a bowl game, but it won't be a very exciting bowl game. It'll be a disappointment.
If they win their next two, they'll go to the Holiday Bowl. They'll be 8-4, or the Alamo. Utah, Oregon, one of them could possibly make the playoff or the Rose Bowl. The next one will go to, is it the Alamo, the number two?
It'll still be a disappointment considering where they start. I mean, right now they're fourth in the Pac-12 North. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the season has not gone necessarily the way they want it to. So what do you take out of it, and what can you look forward to for next year? Like, where is their hope? Because I still assume Eason's going to leave, even though he hasn't played all that well.
This is the conversation that drives you nuts, that we talk about and have for a decade, that it just is a different deal than the NFL. And that is where just the trajectory and the perception matters. Are you growing? Is it going the right way? What they did defensively against Oregon State, playing a couple young people, Levi Onwuzurike has turned into one of the most dominant players on the defensive line in this league, and he'll be back next year. Some of their freshman linebackers and redshirt freshmen that are playing, that secondary that has grown up a little bit, that trajectory, and especially in Corvallis last Friday, was phenomenal. Does that continue against Colorado? Do they beat the Cougs yet again in that defense? So if that trajectory continues to go the right way, then you've only got one significant question. And that is about your offense. and that is about Bush. That's
kind of a big question.
That is about Bush Hamden. That is about Jacob Eason. That is about what got done, what didn't get done.
Okay.
Because that trajectory, Oregon fourth quarter,
if you are Chris
is
Peterson,
going the wrong way.
If you were Chris Peterson, what is your three-step plan throughout this offseason in order to get your offense back to an acceptable level for next year? What do you do with your quarterback? What do you do with your offensive coordinator? And what do you do with the style of what you're trying to do out there?
Yeah, the quarterback one is going to take care of itself, and that's going to be Eason and out of his hands. So ultimately, Jacob Eason, his dad, Tony Eason, they're going to have to make the decision. And from what I have kind of garnered and what I've understood is they wanted to take in the whole year. Unlike a lot of us that have jumped to conclusions and have total opinions, and I know you do, Howdy, you think he's done and he's gone and he's out. They are and wanted to consider the entirety of the season and especially the stretch run. Well, the stretch run's not been good. But ultimately, Chris Peterson doesn't have a say in that. That's going to be Jacob and his family, and they make that decision. So the three-step plan, the quarterback out of his hands. The coordinator, I think, is a legitimate conversation. You've invested now 2 years in Bush Hamden, right? Much like these players, you got to grow and develop. And do they take steps forward? Ultimately, when the dust settles here, is this thing going the right? These next 2 weeks for Bush Hamden, they'll have a bye this upcoming week again. But the final two at Colorado and Wazoo against bad defenses, you've got to score 35 to 40 points. Like, that was the expectation this season. Your players got to get better. Your receivers got to get better. Your play call, things have got to improve. And if they don't, and they end up 6-6, 7-5, 7-6, you have to have a real honest question.
These two teams, Brock, I mean, they can end up 8-4 and still not play well in the last two games. I mean, they have the Cougs number for whatever reason, and it's not like the Cougs have had a great season, and Colorado's no world beater. So, I mean, like, they may end up winning those
games.
They
could lose both, too, this year, though. The Husky team could beat anybody, and they could lose anybody.
They could do what they did to Oregon State twice. They
could win a couple games that are unimpressive. And at that point, then what? All right, you're 8-4. But it was disappointing.
If you go 8-4 or 9-4, whatever, 8-5, whatever it ends up being, and you look at just the hard, fast data, did this group get better? With four senior offensive linemen, and to me, one of the shots of the year, and I think you were, I don't know where you were on Maui, but one of the shots of the year was Nick Harris. Tears. Hands in his helmet, just crying at the end of that Utah game. Because their group did enough. They were great. They handled that Utah front. You know, they ran on him. They protected him well enough. Jacob turned it over. He fumbled. He throws a pick six. Throws another back. Like, and Nick Harris is there, and I love Nick. Man, he's become one of my favorite Huskies there with Dante Pettis as a Husky.
Rocky Ward camp counselor a lot.
Yes, he was. And maybe there's a connection there and a bias relationally to those guys that end up volunteering.
Brock likes all of the Rocky Ward camp counselor alums.
No, not all of them.
That's true. All of them except for...
not all of them. No, we've had a few.
Jake Browner. I've been very loud about Bush Hamden, having him be gone.
You are very
I want
loud.
Him gone.
Yes.
I've said that for a very long time. I want him gone. But the reality is, are the Huskies a top 15 program in college football, generally speaking, overall? And if the answer is yes, which I believe it is, do you have top 15 talent on your coaching staff at offensive coordinator, one of the most important positions in all of college football? If Bush Hamden is not one of the top 20 coordinators in college football, it's time to invest. Yeah. You need to do that well.
The question is, you've invested 2 years in a young first-time play caller. You've invested in him. Are you going to give him the opportunity to pay off that experience?
Well, how many years do you do that for? I mean, like, how much time do you
give? I think I can say this confidently and with a strong opinion. There has to be staff change offensively. You have to bring somebody else in at some position group that has been there and done it before, right? That has some of that because there's recruiters and there's coaches.
I'll do you one better. The only time the offense has been good, really, in Chris Peterson's time is when Jeff Tedford was here.
Yes.
The first half of that season.
Brock, the only time that their offense has really been good is when Jeff Tedford was here.
Yes.
And he's a veteran play caller, I know he wasn't calling plays, but he's a veteran.
His calling
offense,
card,
that's
is
what
football.
He does.
He was a sounding board for another young coordinator, and they don't have that. They don't have that on that staff. They don't have a gray hair on that side of it. I think Chris puts a lot of pressure on those coaches as a former offensive guy, a lot of detail. There's a lot of expectation. I think he's hard on that staff. But, yeah, I think there has to be some staff change. And whether it's a coordinator or not, I think will be really dictated by these final three games of the season.
Who's going to be the quarterback next year?
Dylan Morris?
You think so?
Yeah, I think Jacob probably goes. I think if he plays competently and confidently, I don't think he was in it for the long haul here. Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up saying, you know what, these are things I have to work on. And in this draft class, I got no shot, right, with the way this season went, I can't catch Tua and I can't catch Joe Burrow. But why can't I be Joe Burrow of 2020? Joe Burrow was a guy that had a very inconsistent career. He had transferred. He had transferred to LSU. His 2018 season was very up and down. They make a staff change. They bring in a new offensive philosophy. They cut it loose. And now guess what?
I mean, next
year, Burrow may win the Heisman and may be a top five pick. So Eason can look at that and say, why can't I be the 2020 Joe Burrow? Because if I leave now, I'm leaving with my stock not nearly as high as it
next
could
year.
Be.
He'd also have what, Trevor Lawrence, right? Who would also
he
be
will.
In that draft? So
he will. Yep, you're always going to have somebody, but you don't have two, three, four. Jacob Fromm, who beats you out, who may end up going to a playoff. Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, all of those guys. But more importantly, where is my trajectory? Where am I going in this? Why can't I be what Joe Burrow has been down at
and
LSU?
And that's what the Huskies need to prove the rest of the way. If they really do want to convince Jacob Eason that this thing is worth coming back, they're going to have to show that they can play an offense that fits his skill set, which they should have done the whole season.
Yeah, and he's also got to hit Hunter Bryant on seam routes, and he's also got to throw curl routes, and he's also got to put touch on shallow crosses.
Where is
and
Hunter
he also
Bryant?
Has
is
got
he playing?
His, yeah, he's playing.
He made some big plays Friday.
He did.
Okay.
Yeah, he
still, I was so worried for most answer. Of this year, he's kind of been on the Ziggy Ansah plan, the missing persons.
If they're breaking in a Dylan Morris, are the Huskies more likely to be better or worse next year?
That's the other frustration with the season. Yeah, I think on paper you'd have to say, yeah, it's going to be, you know, a bunch of young dudes playing on offense. Defense should be more veteran. Defense should be better. But, yeah, you're losing a lot of people offensively.
All right, kind of a scary moment. We'll see where that goes. Coming up, Brock, let's finish strong with something we haven't done in a few weeks. A little which is better next. What do we have here?
Oh.
The triumphant return of Which is Better.
Well, my.
Right.
Nice to see you, little Which is Better. Missed this. I got some questions for you guys today. You ready? Which is better, beating Richard Sherman or beating Bruce Arians? One is a former teammate, although he's got a bit of a Benedict Arnold element to him, and the other is a former rival who liked to come up, make excuses, and crow whenever he won. Which is better, beating Sherm or beating Bruce?
It's Sherm. It's got to be Sherm. He used to be here in your locker room. Plus, it doubles down as a division win, so it's worth extra.
Can I give a lousy answer? This is maybe an unfair answer, but I think it's better beating Bruce Arians. I'm sorry, it's better beating Sherm, but it would have been worse losing.
Ooh.
Correct.
You can lose to Bruce Arians and be okay. If you lose to Sherm, it's awful. But beating Bruce Arians is super fun, and beating Sherm is like he doesn't even acknowledge it.
Did you enjoy Bruce Arians just tearing apart his coordinator on the sidelines?
Yes, Byron Leftwich.
Oh,
he was hearing about it.
Oh, shut up.
Why?
I don't
know. Didn't they score on every possession?
Basically.
What was he possibly mad about? Their offense was just fine. Why doesn't he get after his defensive coordinator?
Correct.
Does he even know who that is?
No.
He's like Mike Leach. He doesn't even know who coaches his defense.
Yes.
Like, and something happened with the defense at the end of the game. Which is better, Ziggy Ansah or a loaf of bread?
I mean, like sourdough bread?
Which generates more pressure?
Yeah, I'll go with bread.
Bread. Go with loaf of bread.
I guess you can make Ziggy. A nice grilled cheese.
No, this whole argument, you know what we got to get rid of in the years to come? Oh, they'll just come here and they'll love it here. It was miserable in Detroit, but you got everything here, your training staff, your strength staff, your nutrition. Like, you just come here, you're going to flourish. We got to be careful about doing that. I got to be careful.
He's so bad.
It's been bad.
Which is better, raking the leaves or mowing the lawn?
Mowing the lawn.
Mowing.
Mowing the lawn is so much better than raking leaves.
Because it's... Here's the thing. When you mow the lawn, it's done for a while. The problem with raking the leaves is literally as you're finishing, your lawn is covered with leaves.
Do you have a blower? I thought you had a blower.
Yeah, I do, but I don't use it.
You don't use a blower?
He like straps on these claws.
Yeah.
Things, don't
what?
You?
I use the claws.
He goes Wolverine.
Have you never used the claws?
No.
Edward Scissorsaw.
Oh, it's so great. So I rake up all of my neighbor's leaves because they all fall onto my lawn, as I've told
he
you.
He still hasn't gone to trim that tree.
Yeah, the tree is growing by leaps and bounds. Every day it gets bigger.
With the claws, do you throw the leaves over on his fence?
You rake into piles and you get bags out. And then the claws, you sort of like, they have little plastic things. They go over your hands. They're grabbers. And so instead of being able to pick up a few leaves, you can pick up a giant thing of leaves and get it all into the bag. It probably cuts the amount of work in half.
Wow. It's like mini rakes on your hands.
They're like mini rakes on your hands.
Heather, bring me my claws.
They look like giant bear claws or like mini rakes on your hands.
I call you Wolverine for a long time, but this really sums it up.
And do you only use them for leaves?
Yeah. Okay. What else would you use them for?
back scratching?
No, they're filthy. They're covered in leaves. Oh, okay. The problem with raking leaves in the Pacific Northwest, because my in-laws were up there, like, well, we were going to rake the leaves. We thought we'd do it this one day, but then it rained. We didn't want to rake wet leaves.
So like, wet.
Well, there's no other way to rake leaves here. You don't get to rake dry leaves.
My late opa had a back scratcher.
Stick.
Oh yeah, yeah. Stick like with a hand on it.
This is the same one who sucked the snot out of your nose.
No. That was David Thornton's grandmother. Sorry. In the country in North Carolina. No, you could use those. Just clean them off. You could use them as a back scratcher.
These ones are beyond cleaning. You know when there are certain things that you're like, nope, there's no such thing as cleaning left for this. It just needs to stay outside.
It's been soiled.
It's done. Which is better, Joe Tess on punters or Joe Tess on kickers?
Ooh.
What's up with
Joe Tess?
Well,
it's also Joe Tess on snappers.
Yes.
0.8 seconds, 2/10 of a second faster than the typical NFL operation.
You'll notice that that's a 3/4 rotation.
Michael Dixon with the front spin punt. Absolutely amazing.
Can you imagine a Tess and Soli podcast?
I won't.
Chris Sullivan. No, Chris Sullivan is a long snapper who's converted his garage into a long snapping factory and machine with nets and everything else. Yes. And Joe Tess, and I've known Joe a long time, and his son is a kicker now at Boston College.
I thought he was a punter.
He started as a punter. I think he's transitioned to a kicker. Maybe he's a kicker, and he's still going to try to be a punter, but that's his world, man. That's Joe's world. Joe's world is a special
team's world.
But that's
Joe's world.
That's Joe's world.
That's not our world. That's not the millions watching Monday Night Football's world.
You don't enjoy being informed?
Stop drawing us into your weird world, Joe. We don't care. An amazing snap and spot. Look at the punter spin the laces.
The end of that game was so Joe, too, because it kept coming down to all the specials, the
specialist
kickers.
Game.
He was all about that.
I loved it. Keep it going, Joe.
Which is better, Jake Browning or Jacob Eason?
Stop.
Woo!
Please.
Which is better?
Just who played in a Peach Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, and Rose Bowl?
Which
and who is going to
better?
Play in a Cheez-It Bowl?
Which is better?
Jacob Eason is dramatically better.
If Browning were quarterbacking this team this year, would they be better than 6-4?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they would have. Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
So Browning is not as good as Eason,
no,
but if he were their
close.
Quarterback, they'd be better.
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. I've been telling you this the entire season and the season leading up to it. Design an offense to use the skills of your players. Jacob Eason is not a Chris Peterson quarterback. He's not Jake Browning. Why in the world are we trying to make him that? Of course this isn't going right.
They
of
had
course
him
it's not.
In Jake Haener. They had the right guy.
Right. They should have gone with Haener. I said that
he
at the beginning.
He fits that system. He does what Chris wants
yes.
to do.
Next.
Oh, you don't want to answer?
Square peg, round hole.
How come you're not answering? Blondie?
Travesty.
What, you're afraid to answer that one?
What?
Which is better?
Which is better, Eason or Browning?
See, Eason's going to get drafted in the first round. Second round, if it's a disaster. Jake Browning is fourth-string quarterback.
Stop letting Brock off the hook. He needs to answer this question.
We have seen great college quarterbacks that aren't NFL guys. Is there something wrong with that?
Which is better?
Kellen Moore was a great college quarterback, wasn't an NFL guy. Which is better for the college game? Jake Browning was better. For the college game, Jake Browning's resume speaks for itself. He's the all-time winner. He's tough as heck. Yeah, he doesn't have anywhere near the arm or the size of Jacob Eason, but that's not the quarterback position. Right, Marcus Tuiasosopo is the greatest Washington quarterback. Right? Did he have a great NFL career? Was he an NFL guy, an NFL arm? No. But he got the most out of him and people around him collegiately. And that's unfortunately not happened with Washington this year.
Which is better, fiction or nonfiction?
I like nonfiction.
Yeah, you're a nonfiction guy.
Yeah,
I can't remember you reading fiction.
I'm reading Malcolm Gladwell's new book, Talking Strangers.
You were reading that when I left.
Pretty good. I know. I'm still reading it.
Okay.
It takes a while.
Apparently.
Yes. I think I'm going to read it on the plane. No, I'm not. I'm going to watch
this. This is where Mike's supposed to make a joke about your free time. What's going on?
Right.
Brock doesn't have
time
to read.
To read?
He doesn't even have a job anymore.
Mike's feeling a little bit nervous about that whole thing, given that he's been in Hawaii for like 3 months now.
Other than Grisham, I don't know how much fiction I read.
I was laughing. So there was a couple in Hawaii. There's like the perfect generic reading couple. An older couple. The guy is reading Grisham. The woman is reading Danielle Steele. You're just like, you went to the bestseller list and just grabbed right off.
Wait,
and
was this the couple
that.
At the restaurant you told
no,
us
the
about?
Couple at the restaurant.
Yeah,
I've never
happened?
Seen this late at night. They were eating together. They had their phone and they each had one ear pod in.
Mm. Oh, no.
They had split
ear pods. And let me guess,
pods.
These people were over the age of 50.
No. They weren't.
Oh,
they
usually the phone people that are always harping on millennials are actually like,
I would say
40
they were 40s. Yeah, yeah, they were probably 40s.
Yeah,
they weren't over 50.
Were they watching a movie on the phone?
It was rare to see anybody under 50 there. Mostly what we saw were honeymooners, baby mooners.
And baby boomers.
And baby boomers. Mm. And that was it.
Yep.
There was nobody else like us. There by ourselves. I read two really good books on vacation, honestly.
Are you fiction or nonfiction?
Both. I love, probably at my core, fiction. I read more fiction. But okay. I read Bob Iger's book, which I would recommend very, very strongly. It was awesome.
Who's Bob Iger?
He's the head of Disney. Took over for Michael Eisner. And in his time at Disney, since taking over Disney, acquired Pixar, Marvel, 20th Century Fox, and Lucasfilms.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah. He's done pretty well. He's a really interesting dude. And then I read a book called A Gentleman in Moscow, which I would recommend highly. Mm. Fiction. Mm. It's about a guy who's forced to live in a hotel for the rest of his life on house arrest in Moscow.
Oh.
In like the 1920s.
Wow.
It was good.
Are you a reader, Kyle?
Yeah. I've been on a big adventure kick lately. I just finished a Magellan book, and it got me really into these explorers and sailors. So
who's
now
next?
I'm
DaGama?
Cook. I just started Cook.
Ah,
good. Yeah.
Kyle fancies himself as an amateur cartographer.
Yeah.
Like Amerigo Vespucci. He was a cartographer.
Dead reckoning. Astronomy. Navigating by the stars.
You a flat earth guy?
No, I was until Magellan,
Magellan
read his book, and it was like, well, it turns out he sailed around the world.
And he discovered the international dateline.
He discovered the need for an international dateline.
It's huge.
After being gone for 4 years, he arrives back in Spain. He's like, it's Thursday. They're like, no, it's Wednesday.
At least one,
and he's like, wait, what?
At least one reply all in our office could have used some of that knowledge.
Oh, man.
All right. Which is better, old-fashioned gear shifts or these newfangled turn knob gear shifts?
Not good.
No. Dude, I had one of these in the rental car in Hawaii. I put it into park trying to go into drive like six times.
No, thanks.
Could not get used to it.
No, thank
you. Was there a problem with the regular gear shift?
Nope.
Well,
why
took
do
up
we need
space.
To
it was a real estate issue.
But it was a place to rest your hand. Like, who had a problem? Like, look, I would still rather drive a standard shift instead of automatic. I get that those days are gone. Why do we? Was there a problem with the gear shift?
You know what else is gone? The music. That's the first time that's ever happened.
Time's up.
Congratulations.
All right. Well, we had a lot to say. A lot of which is better to get.
Sure did.
We had a lot more time in the podcast to explore these things. All right. Was everything answered? Was there anything else that you needed answered?
So much more.
Huh?
There's so much more.
There's so much more. Well, it's a good thing we'll be back next week. The Seahawks will have a bye week, so we need a guest. We will find somebody.
Mike Pereira.
Yep. Hopefully. Yep. To come in and talk with us.
And Doug Baldwin. Maybe in studio.
Doug Baldwin in studio. Yep. Mike Pereira on the phone.
Yep.
You're going to want to be there next week for the next Brock and Salk podcast. Until then, the hey.
Barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!